organization. We call the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Probably never see you eye to eye again. This letter's meant to be my last farewell.
8 minutes after the hour of 5.
But you need to understand.
Once again, thank you for joining me here on the Drive Home at 5. It's another solemn day
you need to know
in our country's history as we continue to grieve the loss of life in Las Vegas and wish for the best for many who have been seriously injured. And it was the mission of the President of the United States, Donald Trump, and his wife and staff members of the West Wing to travel to Las Vegas to meet with the families who had lost their loved ones and friends, to visit those in hospital still recovering from their wounds, and to meet with the law enforcement authorities who continue to follow up on their investigation of this schoolboy crackpot killer. This is what the president had to say about law enforcement's effort.
Here on Earth, we are blessed to be surrounded by heroes. As one eyewitness recounted this week, while everyone else was crouching, police officers were standing up as targets, just trying to direct people and tell them where to go.
And then the president was asked, does America, Mr. President, does America have a gun violence problem?
Mr. President, does America have a gun violence problem?
Well, we're not going to talk about that today. We will talk about that.
Indication of a motive, sir?
Not yet. Yeah, we're looking. I can tell you it's a very sick man. He was a very demented person. We haven't seen that yet, but you will know very soon if we find something. We're looking very, very hard. I'm actually going over to the police department, who likewise, Dr. Finnegrove.
So the president said there'd be no discussion about gun control today, although Gabby Giffords, the former congresswoman from Arizona who was almost killed, shot in the head by a crazed gunman, she did come out with a number of Democrats on the Hill and said, no, Mr. President, now is the time to discuss gun violence in America and gun control. On the line, though, to discuss the president's visit and the follow-up on the security provisions, both in the hotel sector and obviously the casino sector, to make sure this kind of carnage doesn't happen again, is Weston Conwell. Number one, he's the director of Guardian Angel Operations in Las Vegas, but that's not why we have him on the air. He's also president of his own security company, Acme Security and Private Investigation, which has a lot of their armed guards in the hotels and the casinos that you've been seeing so much about on the Strip. Thanks for joining us again, Weston.
Curtis, thank you for having me back on.
All right, so what is the mood in Las Vegas, and how has the arrival of the president, his wife, and his staff been received there?
The mood is somber. People are taken back. People are being courteous to each other. People are quick to greet and try and be positive and put a positive spin on it. Absolutely devastating. And it's felt in every corner, in every inch, in every street, at every light, at every coffee stand, the pain and anguish that everyone's going through. You're hard-pressed to find a single person in the city that didn't know somebody or was not directly affected by the shooting that went on.
Now, Weston, as people mourn what transpired in Las Vegas, the president has asked that there not be discussions about gun control or gun violence at this time. Meantime, we see in Washington and in all other cities, it's constant chatter about that, especially about this bump stock device that Stephen Paddock, the gunman, had acquired legally online that then converted his legal semi-assault weapons into full automatics. Has there been discussion in Las Vegas by people as to whether this is the appropriate time to discuss measures of gun control and what to do about the escalating gun violence in this country?
I think that the conversation needs to happen immediately, but the people in Las Vegas are still wounded. We're still hurt. We're still gathering together and rallying together. it's not the time to have a podium here in Las Vegas and talking gun control here. You want to have it in Arizona, New York, Washington, absolutely. But don't come to our podiums and tell us what we're going to do. Let us heal. Let us start to heal. Let us start to come together as a community, band together in our strengths. But when tools like this bump stock, which has absolutely no place, bump stock has no place in our society. You can make points for hunting. You can make points for needing these tools of firearms. I mean, we use them in our business every day. But to be able to go out there and for $99 put a new stock on your gun, which is basically it, just the part that hooks to your shoulder and converts it to a fully automatic weapon, there is no place in our society for something like that to be out there. For $99, any loose screw in your head, knucklehead that's out there can put this on and create immense amounts of damage. Had he not had that one particular device, in fact, 12 of those devices in his room, to convert 12 automatic machine guns up there, the carnage would be nothing like this. Yes, they had scopes, and yes, they were high-powered, and yes, his ammunition was there. And these are things we might not be able to deal with in the short term, and these are greater discussions for greater times, but a $99 trinket that you can bedazzle your gun with and go out there and wave havoc in hell and crack the earth open and kill 59 people, wounding 525 others for a $99 little bedazzle element you have to have on your gun is absolutely ludicrous.
Now, final question, because when I visited Las Vegas, I've seen you and your guards, armed guards, Weston, covering a lot of casinos and hotels for the Acme Security and Private Investigative Agency that you own. We have a host on before us, Michael Savage, who had made recommendations now in terms of what should be done security-wise to prevent these kind of actions from taking a place again in the hotel casino industry.
I say that metal detectors would be a rational answer to some of these future problems. Total TSA screening, no matter how complex it is.
Would that actually work, Weston? Could that be done in the hotels with the many visitors that you have there?
Could it? Absolutely. Will it happen? It will never happen. People come to Las Vegas for that footloose and fancy-free attitude. They want to come in and feel like high rollers. They want to come and go. They might want to gamble in their bathrobe and slippers. They might want to bring in 25 bags into their room with all of their worldly possessions. These things happen every day. And at the Wynn Casino today, they are out with metal detectors. They are screening everybody going in. But if there's a will, there's a way. And as this guy showed, if there's a will, there's a way. You can scope it out. He's just finding out now that he scoped out the event we do security for, which is Life is Beautiful, a larger event with a larger ticket of people there, that he had actually booked the room overlooking the main stage, and he was up there in the room with balconies looking down onto the event, and it didn't happen days before. So no matter what you do and where, and this was an Airbnb situation, so now you're in a condo tower in an Airbnb, and we're going to put up metal detectors, and where would it begin? Where would it stop? Would it work? Yes. Could we do it? Absolutely. Is it practical? No.
So you're saying that right now at the Wynn Casino and Hotel in Vegas on the Strip, they are now metal detecting everything that comes in and out of that establishment?
Yes. As of today, they're metal detecting everything that goes in and out of that establishment. I personally believe it won't last because of the inconvenience and the flux of people, but anything that makes people feel better. I just came back from Barcelona, as I mentioned yesterday, and when you walk down the street in Barcelona, when you walk down the street in Italy, when I was there a week before that, you would see troops outside with machine guns at all of their national treasures, at all of their points of interest, and maybe that's somewhere else we need to go to let people know that we take this seriously. But to be honest, in a situation like this where somebody can book a room, go up to his room with enough planning to have video cameras to put out into the hallways to see when the police are coming and security are coming and to return fire so he doesn't have to take his eyes off of his targets, to have the forethought to bring a sledgehammer to break the windows out that he can shoot, get his timing just right to when all the mass crowds were in, where they were no longer letting anyone else in, knowing the last sets were there and the people were cheering and knowing it was the end of an event, to plan everything out to its nth degree like that, these details will not take care of. We can do everything we can to try and prevent. We can do everything we can. But if somebody's that determined, someone's there. It goes back to what happened in Barcelona. If somebody wants to rent a U-Haul pickup truck with a credit card and a driver's license, there's enough crowds all over America that they can mow people down. So in this, we can get our microscope out and we can look at it and say, what can we change? The one thing we can change right away is that $99 piece of equipment that's out there that's ludicrous to own. But besides that, when do we become a police state and locking everybody down? Would I support it? Absolutely. Will we put people there? Yes. If that's what we need to feel safe, great. Do we need to bring our troops in and have them on the corners with a machine gun giving a nod saying, not again in the United States, we won't do this again? Absolutely. We need to do everything, but we also need to do it with an educated approach, with our eyes wide open and look at it. And to come out with this blatant statement saying, it's gun control. Criminals are already breaking the laws on the guns. So either take them all away or start putting measures in that work, that enforcing the laws that work. And the oldest adage in the book is, if you see something, say something. If your spouse decides tomorrow that he needs 22 long rifles converted to automatic, that's a big red flag. I think I'm going to jump up and say something. I don't think I'm going to put my hand under the phone and go, she's on a weird spending spree.
Oh, completely understood. I think we lost Weston Conwell there. Our disqualificator facing west, but apparently there must have been a dust storm out there, or I blame you, Brian Mongalooch, hipster millennial board operator with your man bun, your skinny jeans, your Converse sneakers that I hate, I loathe, and I despise.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel found a Curtis Sliwa.
Really try to help our cause.
WABCRadio.com.
Pasito a pasito, suave, suavecito.
As we continue here on the drive home at 5, time again to connect with my guardian angels on the island of Puerto Rico, who yesterday made it up into the mountains, the real rural areas that haven't seen any supplies, any relief. On the line once again, our senior director, Arnaldo Salinas, been with me for 38 years, born and raised on the island of Puerto Rico. Arnaldo, how did the people of Puerto Rico yesterday greet the arrival of the President of the United States, Donald Trump?
Well, let me tell you, Curtis, when I drove by the airport yesterday, there was fanfare for the President. There were people standing on the side of the highway with Trump signs and American flags. They thought he was our savior. And right now, we'd be willing to take a troop of Girl Scouts that would come in here and help us out. But the truth of the matter is, after he spoke, that was it. That was the beginning of the end, a downward spiral. The general consensus of Puerto Rico today is screw Trump. That is it. He came here to tell us that we're okay when we know we're not, when we have teams of search and rescue from all over the world here trying to help out. Right now we're with Convoy of Hope going to these places where there's still no light, no gas. Maybe where the president went, he was received with his nice cocktail, his cold water, air conditioning, driving in his SUVs. But that is not the fact here in Puerto Rico. The fact in Puerto Rico is that we're barely surviving. Even us guardian angels, we gave of our own supplies to help out because there's despair, there's devastation on this island. That's the Puerto Rico that I know traversing it from east to west, from north to south. This is a devastating event. First, we got set up by Hurricane Irma, right, who almost put us down, but just we managed to save ourselves a bit. But then came Hurricane Maria, and that was the knockout blow.
Arnaldo, what was it that Trump said yesterday that turned so many people against him in Puerto Rico?
Well, when someone comes out of here and either has misinformation or is about as sharp as a bowling ball, take your choice, and tells us that only 16 people died, when I know for a fact that over 40 and the count is still growing. When he tells us that this is not a real catastrophe compared to Katrina, Katrina was a catastrophe. I know. The guardian angels went out there and we worked it. We did everything we could for everyone we could. And that's what we do. However, no one can tell me with 39 years of experience doing what I do that this is not catastrophic, that this is not the deadliest hurricane to ever hit Puerto Rico. And this is the beginning. I've said it before. This is the honeymoon stage of this, for lack of a better phrase. However, what about the dysentery? Yesterday, we had to rush an old man to the hospital because he's drinking tap water, which is contaminated here in Puerto Rico. There's no schools in Puerto Rico. What about the education of the children here in the future? What about the dysentery? the effects of no light, no gas, the despair, you're going to tell me that this is not a catastrophe of the highest level? Please.
You made the trip yesterday into the mountains of Puerto Rico with supplies. It's one of the first times people have been up in that area. Describe for us the security situation and the need that people have in their homes.
Well, let me tell you, Curtis, you know what the Guardian needs to do. You know we have heart. We're going into places where no electricity, no water, no food. There is no security. People are going into other people's homes. Homes have been abandoned because people need to get out of there, and these homes are being looted. Gangs are walking in the street armed to the teeth. Yet we're going in there, and we're the only light of hope for some of these people. People have cried. We had a gentleman kneel at our feet yesterday, and we're like, no, no, we're doing this because we're sons and daughters of Puerto Rico. Because we need to do this. But there is absolutely nothing, and hope is the only thing that they can hang onto. And that's fading. Now, it might be a little strong, but I guarantee you, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, when nobody goes up there or down there in these roads that are half roads, our vehicles were just made it by. Roads are eroding, landslides, homes are falling down, and it continues to rain here in Puerto Rico. That's another factor. Weather is not helping us. It feels like 110 during the day, and then it rains in the afternoon, soaking up ground that cannot take any more water. It is totally saturated, and landslides all over the island. We're doing best that we possibly can to get to the places where no one else will dare to go. Not the mayors of any town, not FEMA, not the soldiers. The Guardian Angels go where we have to go to take care of those who need help.
And if any of our listeners is still trying to find family or friends, as the Guardian Angels on Puerto Rico go from east to west, north to south on the island, please go to www.guardianangels.org. That's guardianangels.org. Put in your request, and we'll see if Arnaldo Salinas and the Guardian Angels there can find your loved ones and get back to you.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this city better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. It was a courageous thing to do, but someone was already here.
5:39, as we continue on the drive home at 5 with this old song. It was played for me, and I'm sure for some of you, when you were just young little whippersnappers in elementary school and learned about the Nina, the Pinta, the Santa, and the Maria, right? The four ships that ended up merging into three, the Santa Maria. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We can tell that story on a different day. But we're coming into the weekend in which there is a plethora of celebrations around Christopher Columbus and Italian heritage, and they're all throughout the tri-state area. And some of the more notable ones, like, for instance, on Saturday in the heart of Bensonhurst, where it's been a tradition, 18th Avenue, 60th Street, 12 noon, the annual Brooklyn Columbus Day Parade kicks off. Then out in Staten Island and Mount Loretta, they have like 3 days of festivals. They used to have a parade, but now it's like 3 days of festivals. And then, naturally, you have the mother of all parades right up Fifth Avenue on Monday. Then you have the parade in Howard Beach in Queens. Not quite sure this year when it is. But there is a parade that has a tradition, and it's in Morris Park, the Morris Park section of the Bronx. But this year, the mayor has been told, you are persona non grata at this parade by the parade committee and its chairman, Tony Signorelli, who joins us here on the drive home at 5. Thanks for jumping on board, Tone.
Well, thank you, Curtis, for having me.
Now, Tony, was the mayor originally scheduled to come to your parade in Morris Park?
Originally, we invite all the elected officials. But from the beginning, as soon as this fiasco with the Columbus statue came surface, it was decided right away by the committee that we had to take a stand on this. Like you just said, this is a traditional parade, and this year will be the 31st year for the Morris Park Parade. So it's been for 41 years that children, younger than us, than me, I should say, they have grown to see this parade. And all the elected officials or personality, movie stars or whoever.
Now let me ask you a question, Tony. The parade is on Sunday. At what time does it start from what location?
The parade is on this Sunday, October 8th. It starts at the corner of White Plains Road and Morris Park Avenue.
And what time does it kick off?
Kickoff is at noon.
Now, you don't mind if I come with some Guardian Angels and mayoral candidate Sal Albanese, who has defended keeping the statue at 59th Street Columbus Circle?
Absolutely. You are welcome. You and Sal.
Now, let me ask you a question, Tom. From which part of Italy were you born and raised?
I am from the Puglia region, which is on the Adriatic coast, same coast as Venice. Okay, and I came in 1961, and the first statue that I saw when I came from the boat, and I remember the time just like it was yesterday. We came into the harbor in New York. It was about 7:40 a.m., and the first statue that I saw was the Statue of Liberty. Then, a couple of years later, going to school, I still didn't speak English, and we had a field trip, and they took us to Central Park, and then they walked us to the Statue of Liberty, the Columbus statue at Columbus Circle. So that was the second statue that I remember that I saw in this country. And the story about that statue is that that statue was not paid by elected officials or the city of New York or the state of New York. That was paid by immigrants, Italian immigrants, out of their own pocket, and had that statue built and erected where you see it today.
Well, that's interesting, Tony, because my grandfather, Fidel Bianchino, who came from further south on the Adriatic coast, a little town of Andria in Bari, he actually...
Well,
Yes.
I hate to tell you, I am Baris.
Oh, you are?
I know Andrea.
Ah, so you have ice cubes in your pocket.
I never delivered them, but eventually it will come the day where I will deliver ice blocks.
Well, it's interesting, Tony, because my grandfather told me the same story when he brought me to Central Park and we saw... at least I saw the statue of Christopher Columbus for the first time at 59th Street Columbus Circle. He said, hey, you know, this came from the hard-earned work of blue-collar working-class Italians, you know, ditch diggers and others who were working with their hands, working 12-hour, 14-hour days, 6 days a week, and they contribute to the building of the statue. I think it's something that this mayor does not understand, even though he can trace part of his own family roots to Italy itself. Would you say this is un disgrazia?
That's a shame, because for a mayor that claims to be an Italian, and this past summer, I believe, he took the entire family, and they welcomed him and the family with open arms, you know, to do something, to have reached this point, Curtis, it's unfair. He should have put his feet down from day one and say, look, not only Columbus statue, but no other statues will be taken down. Okay? He should have done this at the beginning.
Well, Tony, I know it's too late for him, but you put your foot down as chairman of the Morris Park Annual Christopher Columbus Day Committee, and you told him you are a persona non grata. You're not welcome. The mayor will not be there. I'm asking all of you to come out, support this annual parade. I'll be there with mayoral candidate Sal Albanese, who was actually born. He's Calabrese, which means he has a hard head. And he came over on the SS Christopher Columbus to these shores. He's the only immigrant running for mayor. And again, it's this Sunday, on the corner of White Plains Road and Morris Park. You cannot miss it. 12 noon, rain, snow, sleet, or shine. I'll be there with Guardian Angels and our Reform Party candidate for mayor, Sal Albanese, an Italian immigrant himself.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yes.
He's an American hero.
WABCRadio.com.
As we continue here in the Drive Home at 5, one of my favorite segments about the geriatric espresso-sipping psychotic killers of organized crime. And a crime that had not been solved, at least until recently, and then the person responsible not charged. Let me take you back a year ago to the 90th annual Mulberry Street Festival. There was a vicious beating of Bonanno turncoat soldier Joseph Joe Mook D'Amico. It put him in the hospital. The guy who should have been charged for that was Thomas Tommy Stacks Leonisi. He is a hitman and a leg breaker for the Genovese crime family. Now, in addition, he had done time recently because at the age of 56, he was a newspaper driver in the union, mobbed up as it is for the New York Post, stole $21,000 and ended up being shipped upstate. But he was back, and back with a vengeance. And everybody wants to know, if you know that Thomas Tommy Stacks Leonosa beat the living daylights to within an inch of this guy's life a year ago, how come he wasn't charged? Well, law enforcement, particularly the FBI forever busting Italians, cited an earlier nearby assault against D'Amico's cousin, Joseph Campanella. It was a couple of months earlier, and it was a violation of his supervised release following his most recent prison term for ripping off the New York Post as a driver of the mobbed-up union for $21,000. But Tommy Stacks got a break. He received just 4 months despite facing more than a year in prison for that theft. But the hot-headed Stacks didn't waste any time violating his release terms. He cold-cocked and pummeled Campanella in June of 2016. That was the same day he got out of jail. Can you believe that? And what he claims is that he and this Gavone Campanella, they both lived in Knickerbocker Village on the Lower East Side. Now, you may know that the old New York Post building, which is right along the FDR Drive before you get to Brooklyn Bridge, right behind it is Knickerbocker Village. And it has produced more than its fair share of mobsters choking on their lobsters, including one of their defense counsels, Matthew Murray. Oh, yeah, yeah. The Knickerbocker Village scene. Now, captured on a security video, they show the hitman from the Genovese crime family, Leonessa, is flooring Campanella with a vicious right-hand punch to the face and then kicking him over and over again, punching him several times while he's on the ground. The guy is knocked out. And he's doing all of this while holding two bags of groceries in his left hand. Now, is that dexterous or what? And then at the end of the 30-second video, Leonessa picks up the victim's cell phone, smashes it to smithereens, and then calmly strolls away from his battered victim and into the housing complex without losing a single item from the two bags of groceries. Now, you think the Genovese crime boys are going to give him a standing O for that? Of course they are. But then again, his defense attorney, his liar for hire, said, no, you don't understand. They were childhood friends in Knickerbocker Village. They've known each other for decades. But, you know, when Leonosa went away to jail, all of a sudden Campanella, he's starting to use drugs. He's dealing drugs. And then he starts dealing drugs to Tommy Leonessa's stepdaughter. Tommy warns him, you stay away from my stepdaughter. But Campanella didn't listen. So Leonessa had to do what he had to do in order to protect his stepdaughter. Now you say to yourself, here's an enemy of society, Tommy Leonessa. How many other guys has he beaten within an inch of their life? And I know for some of you, you're listening, you're saying, yeah, but aren't these mobbed up guys too? Why should we care? You think they're the only guys he picks on and he bullies? Of course not. Maybe it's the only ones he's ever been caught doing that to, particularly since one of the attacks was on video. But how is it you viciously beat one guy at last year's San Gennaro Festival, you get away with that lock, stock, and barrel. You beat down his relative, Campanella, at Knickerbocker Village. It's on videotape. And you're not doing like 10 years or more, particularly since you have a long track record of violations, Scott Tissue Paper Law. Nah, somebody needs to look into this. The Genovese crime family, they're protecting their hitman, their leg breaker, Tommy Leonessa. And somebody at the FBI forever busting Italians needs to wake up and smell the Medaglia d'Oro coffee and say, what's next? Tommy's going to kill somebody. Then what are you going to say? You're going to look at one another and say, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so?